This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of November 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of November. Your readers today are Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: cuts put future of hat fair in doubt. Winchester Choir wows the critics at the Albert Hall. And all smiles as Royal braves the rain. So, Margaret, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is headed, as Keith said, "Cuts put future of hat fair in doubt." The future of a long-standing Winchester Arts Festival is in doubt following cuts to funding, writes Toby Oliver. Play to the Crowd, the charity that runs the Theatre Royal, Hat Fair and Playmakers, has learnt that it will no longer be a national portfolio organisation. This was a key part of the funding mix of Winchester's annual international arts festival, Hat Fair. Andrew Loretto, Hat Fair and Playmakers director, said, "This is extremely disappointing news to receive, not only for the team here at Play to the Crowd, but for the hundreds of artists, performers and community participants who love to perform at the Hat Fair Festival and the audiences in their thousands that attend. We will take some time to reflect and discuss the situation with Arts Council England and our other stakeholders to find the best way forward. We will find a way to ensure that some form of Hat Fair will take place in 2023. I know that Winchester want Hat Fair to find a way forward. We will need to look at the format and at other ways to raise the income required to stage the festival. The ACE NPO grant was the largest part of the funding mix that enabled Hat Fair to happen each year. Although we won't be funded as part of the national portfolio, ACE are very positive about our application and are keen to work with us to find alternative funding sources." Derek Newland, chief executive of Play to the Crowd, said, "This is a blow and shock to us all. However, we will take some time to look at the business model of the festival and explore all funding options available to us going forward. We are determined to do all we can to ensure that Hat Fair continues in the years ahead in some way. But without ACE MPO support, it becomes much more challenging. We recognise the difficult decisions that Arts Council England have had to make, but this outcome is obviously extremely disappointing for us. Hat Fair is the UK's longest running outdoor arts festival and attracts audiences of more than 90,000 to Winchester every year. The family-friendly festival features street performance and outdoor arts from around the world, as well as providing a platform for local and community artists."
Winchester Choir wows the critics at the Albert Hall. Members of Winchester's Wainfleet Singers joined the Bournemouth Symphony Chorus to perform Mahler's Eighth Symphony at the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra under the baton of Vasily Petrenko. In front of a sell-out Albert Hall audience, the massive forces included over 400 singers, full symphony orchestra and eight soloists for this work, often nicknamed the Symphony of a Thousand. The concert had been received to great critical acclaim in the broadsheets, with 4- and 5-star reviews in the Telegraph, Guardian and the Times. In the Daily Telegraph reviews, Ivan Hewitt said, "Just keeping so many musicians coordinated is a superhuman task, which conductor Vasily Petrenko managed superbly well. But more than that, he balanced these huge forces so that we could hear the fine detail under all the tumult." Rebecca Frank in The Times said, "Several of its best moments are big and visceral. Take the thundering organ and vast walls of choral sound in the Veni, Creator Spiritus, or the brass blazing from the high behind the choir. that music you need to feel in your bones. Petrenko let those sonic spectacular passages soar, driving part one forward and brilliantly landing part two's transcendent redemptive conclusion 90 minutes later. The choir had been rehearsing this complex work since June with the Bournemouth Symphony Chorus and their chorus master Gavin Carr, with regular rehearsals in Poole and Bournemouth. The performance received outstanding ovation from the packed hall. Speaking after the concert, Sarah Jones, deputy chairman of the Wainfleet Singers, said, "We were privileged to be invited to join forces with the BSC for this momentous occasion. This is rarely performed work, and for many of our singers it will have been a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The whole experience was utterly thrilling, and to receive a standing ovation at the end was simply the icing on the cake." The Wainfleet Singers' next concert is in the Winchester Cathedral on Saturday, December the 3rd, when they will perform with the London Mozart Players, a Christmas programme including Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on Christmas carols and Finzi's In Terra Plath, complete with carols for choir and audience. Tickets are on sale from the Cathedral box office.
And there were all smiles as the Royal braves the rain. And this is Princess Anne visiting Sparshot College. Excuse me. An ill-timed burst of rainfall failed to dampen the excitement of staff, students and even the lemurs at a college near Winchester as HRH, the Princess Royal, unveiled new multi-million pound facilities. Sparshot College Group welcomed Princess Anne and guests to its Sparshot campus to officially open the Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre. Escorted by College Group Principal and CEO Julie Milburn, she toured new housing for companion animals and enclosures for zoo animals, as well as the refurbished Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons accredited Veterinary Nursing Training Centre. Along the route, she had the opportunity to meet students and staff in situ, from uniform protective services students lining the arrival route to veterinary nurses and foundation learning students, all showcasing their skills. Princess Anne, who arrived by helicopter, was also able to visit the new ring-tailed and black lemur enclosure before heading to see the meerkats to learn about research projects and see other species in the collection, such as red pandas, porcupines and padmelon. The tour concluded with the unveiling of a commemorative plaque for the Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre in front of a host of dignitaries, students and staff. Neil Hopkins, Chairman of Governors at Sparshot, said, "We're extremely proud of the facility, and it's very good of the Princess Royal to come and join us, even though she almost got soaked at the end. There's so much to see here, and we're delighted with what has been done." She spent a lot of time walking around and spoke to a number of the students, which perhaps rewarded them for standing out in the cold and wet. Student Isla Ingram, age 16, had a chance to speak with Princess Anne during the tour. She said, "It was a bit scary, but she was really nice. She asked us what we were interested in, how the course is, and what our favourite animal is." Holly Nape, also 16, said, "It was a bit intimidating. I was nervous waiting for her to come round, but she was very nice." Winchester City Council leader Martin Todd said, "It was brilliant to see how much all of the young people here really appreciated the Princess Royal coming to see them, and it was brilliant to see this fantastic new facility." And the article is accompanied by quite a few photographs. There's the Princess Royal, who really is a trooper, and probably is at the ready to make sure that she doesn't get too drenched. Some of the animals there. And, of course, the curious lemurs, who are all standing up as they do in their very comical way, standing up, looking out to see what on earth was going on.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. And we start with the death announcements this week. Clark, William Charles Clark, who died at home, aged 92. Harfield, John Harfield, died peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 87. Humphreys, Mark Charles Humphreys, who died on the 12th of October, aged 59. Lister, Avril Elaine Lister, died peacefully on the 25th of October, aged 82. Miles Lovelock, Carol Miles Lovelock, died peacefully on the 31st of October, aged 77. And Tutton, Peter Edmund Tutton, died on the 16th of October, aged 90. And now I think we've got a Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment was written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. And it's entitled, Father and Mother God. Perhaps the best biblical model for understanding leadership is fatherhood, suggests John Mumford, founder of Vineyard Churches UK. It's a better fit than most modern metaphors. Better than business, boss, employee, army, colonel, private, or even education, teacher, pupil. While there are helpful aspects in all three metaphors, it's fatherhood that the Apostle Paul cites when describing his own leadership model. Paul reminds the Thessalonian church that his style it was to exhort them, in other words, to encourage and urge them in their fledgling faith. As you know, we are dealt with each of us as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. As a Christian leader, I am encouraged to be like a father to my congregation, which is distinctly different to a teaching role, where I'm mainly just sharing information. I am to urge people into God's very best for them, attempting to call them into maturity. As a father in the natural, I have a perspective on life which my children don't yet share. I can see things that they can't. But I can also see that the gaps are bridgeable. So I am honestly able to encourage them, you can do this. And to a large extent, it's the same in the church. We are not cultivating political parties. We are raising families. Leadership is all about influence and the natural outworking of discipleship for someone who is actively following Jesus is to start to become like a father or mother themselves or older brother or sisters for others who are not quite so far along the journey. And like sonship in the Bible, this kind of leadership is gender neutral. In fact, just three verses earlier, Paul writes of his deep love and affection. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you, because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. That's from Thessalonians. Paul, a single man, suggests a real sense of completion in the way he led the Thessalonian church, reflecting both God's masculine and feminine qualities. God, despite his common pronouns, is often described with female characteristics. He is a nursing mother, a comforting mother, a mother eagle, and a mother bear, amongst others. In a recent sermon, I referenced Rembrandt's famous Return of the Prodigal Son painting as a deep expression of the father's love. And someone told me that if you look closely at the father's hands, they are clearly different. The left is large, strong, and masculine, while the right is smaller and more slender. Could it be, as Henri Nouwen suggested, that Rembrandt is subtly representing the completeness of God in his care for the Son, and therefore expressing the completeness of God's heart towards all of us? And as we said earlier, that was written this week by Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters to the editor. We have six letters, and Margaret, you've got the first, please.
And this is a letter from Peter Innes. Act on accidents. Again in the news, two more accidents, one of them tragically fatal. We ask when, if ever, is something going to be done? And if not, then why not? A roundabout has been proposed many times, but this might involve land acquisition on the Abbotsworthy side and would probably entail much relocation of underground services. It might really be preferable and achievable and much less costly to install traffic lights. Small road widenings would provide two lanes at each entrance, one for the left turn, one for the straight-ons and right turns. They would be four-way lights. There might be small delays at busy times, but safety would be assured. This work can be totally independent of the M3 Junction 9 project, and it certainly would be completed 4 years before 2027, or whenever. At the very least, isn't it time for both county and city councillors to come clean and become properly accountable themselves, instead of repeatedly sloping shoulders on every tough subject? Tell us what might they be thinking of actually doing. If nothing, then why nothing? Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Head Bournemouth.
Realistic solution. Changes to road layout seem to require a number of deaths before a constructive, practical and common sense approach is applied. A suitable layout for the Kingsworthy Junction is needed as a matter of urgency, Chronicle November the 3rd. Minor modifications are insufficient, addressing only a part of the problem. Hampshire County Council and Hampshire Highways need to set about a serious layout change before there are even more deaths or life-changing injuries. Should a roundabout provide a realistic solution, together with an appropriate speed limits, lives will be saved. Hampshire County Council and Hampshire Highways need to take urgent action rather than prevaricating at the cost of lives. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badgers Farm.
And this one's entitled Student Parking. There has been much publicity in your paper concerning the problems of illegal parking on Winall Estate. As residents in Stanmore, particularly the upper part, we can sympathise. However, our main problem here is with legal parking. Some HMO landlords have been carrying out improvements which attract a wealthier type of student who can afford to run cars. This results in an additional of up to four cars with parking permits taking up space on the roads. This means that long-term residents are faced with being unable to park near their homes. And this causes distress to long-term residents and antipathy towards the university. The university does little to discourage students bringing cars with them to Winchester, or to check if there is off-road parking available when they rent a property. I do not understand why students are eligible to apply for residence parking permits when they do not pay council tax. It would seem to be a simple solution to only allow long-term residents eligible to pay council tax, apart from long-term residents who would be able to apply for concessions, to apply for parking permits. Maybe we should be putting up notices stating, students with cars unwelcome here. That has been suggested. And that comes from Chris Bullen, Battery Hill, Stanmore, Winchester.
Opinions ignored. This is a letter from Dr. Les Burwood. Roger Stevens' Chronicle Letters, November the 3rd, makes some excellent points about the madness of diverting an established major road through a new housing estate. Crucially, we are told by local politicians that nobody can do a thing about it. The general point that we can extend from this example is that so many recent decisions made by local politicians seem to be bonkers, but we ordinary people are rendered impotent on our attempts to get different solutions implemented. No matter how much we use reasoned argument to back up common sense. So a roundabout at Kingsworthy? No, not enough people have been killed. Handing over a local park to a distant university, bringing 1,000 more unwanted students to a small city? No problem. Car parking by students in Stanmore and the lower Sleepers Hill area has blighted the lives of long-term residents for some 15 years. Yet, we are told, in effect, that nobody can do anything about it. We write letters to this newspaper, to local politicians, to the university, but these are ignored and nothing ever changes apart from the situation getting worse. In Mr. Stevens' words, we impotently flail about with arguments of reason, logic and common sense, but everything we do is ultimately a futile gesture. As featured several times in the Hampshire Chronicle, residents of Sleepers Dell Gardens have provided arguments about and evidence of major problems caused by students parking here, even though no students live here. We have asked for double yellow lines on our road, but whatever we do, we are fobbed off time and time again. Our lives remain blighted, but whatever we do will be ignored and council bureaucracy will be cited to say why nothing can be changed, despite a simple common sense solution. Think about all this when next you use your vote. Dr. Les Burwood, Sleepers Dell Gardens, Winchester.
Blight on city. I love Winchester and my fellow Wintonians who welcome and make Winchester a fantastic place to live. But there are a few who blight our city and stain its character. I'm on about the alcoholics, druggies and shoplifters who beg for money when they have money of their own and pester and bully people with disabilities to giving them money to make by making threats of violence and death threats. The police and council know who they are, and as they got moved on from the old wall by Sainsbury's. In my own view, and if others agree or disagree, that is their choice, these people should be banned from the city centre for 24 hours or 48 hours. If they ignore this, then they should face arrest, and if council tenants be warned that they would lose their homes. I would now be interested if the police took my suggestion and my fellow Wintonians' view on this matter. And that was from Mark Rowe, Taplin's Close, Week in Winchester.
And this final letter is very different. This is a letter which is actually a thank you. So it's a very different tone of letter. And it's a thank you for the wonderful carers. I live at Chesil Lodge, Winchester, which is run by Winchester City and Hampshire Councils. It is assisting living accommodation for seniors, many of whom have health problems. For some months recently, I've been troubled by a problem on my leg, and after a checkup at my GP's, plus photos taken and sent, I was assured all was well and there was no need to worry. Last week, after a short outing with my family, I was taking a shower and suddenly the leg started to bleed in a really scary way. I called my husband, who suffers from dementia and gets confused, so it took some time to summon help. Meanwhile, blood was coming out of the wound at an amazing rate. Soon, Chita Sungay, the care manager, rushed in quickly to be followed by six other carers. My leg was raised, a towel tightly bound round it to stem the flow, and the ambulance was called. And the carers said they'd never seen so much blood. When I was taken to hospital, my bathroom was a horrible mess with blood everywhere. On my return, the bathroom was spotless. The towels had been laundered, and my husband had been looked after while I was away. Had it not been for Chita Sungay and her staff, I know I would not be here to write this letter. In these times of gloom and doom about social Clare, I am sure the readers will be heartened by at least one piece of good news. And that's good news from Joy Brown, Chesil Street, Winchester.
Nice to end on a positive letter. And now we have Chronicle editorial comment, please, Margaret.
Time to go back to basics for Hat Fair. The Hat Fair celebrates its 50th anniversary in 2024. It was founded in 1974 by local clown Jonathan Kay. It is the UK's longest-running festival of outdoor arts. Its future in its current form is in serious doubt after the Arts Council relegated it from its status as an NPO, a national portfolio organisation. The council is looking to expand the arts in less affluent areas where it has less of a foothold, such as Wigan and Hastings. Of course, this is bad news for the Hat Fair organisers, but so also surely an opportunity. There is no doubt that the event has grown and become more organised, more corporate and more costly to stage. Some would argue that this is inevitable in the 21st century, but is it? The real joy of the event was its slightly anarchic and playful feel. The Chronicle is not saying for a minute that it was badly organised back in the 1980s and 90s, but it had a unique spirit, something eccentric that fitted in well with Winchester. What would be lost if instead of putting on paid-for events at North Walls Rec, it went back to its roots and to basics?
Thank you. Now we've got first person, Norma, please.
And this is entitled Lest We Forget by Khalid Aziz. On Sunday, throughout the length and breadth of our land, we will pause and reflect. For many, Remembrance Sunday will have been even more poignancy as we have a new monarch. As we're all wondering how we're going to get through the winter, it perhaps put things in perspective as we remember those who had their winters cut short. Last weekend, I was privileged to attend a festival of remembrance in Eastleigh. Standards were paraded, there was music from the excellent Hampshire Constabulary Band and the delightful Muriel Alexandra, a Hampshire-based French chanteuse who evoked her inner Vera Lynn, thrilling a packed audience. Such things matter during troubled times. They are the rocks on which we cling when things are rough. The Eastleigh event marked the start of this year's Poppy Appeal. A trip to London last week revealed teams of poppy sellers out in strength at Waterloo. Good to see Rishi Sunak doing his bit at Westminster Tube Station, albeit briefly. A photo op, certainly, but I would say the right kind of leadership example as he wrestles with one of the most complex set of economic circumstances we've seen for decades. Unlike the financial crash of 2008, this current crisis is a multi-headed monster. We have Putin's savage incursion into Ukraine. Who knew how critical Ukraine was to feeding the world? We know now. The response to Russia's brutal bullying has been sanctions. We're all sharing the pain in rocketing energy costs, including the price of wood pellets for my eco-friendly central heating boiler. With 40% of such pellets coming from the boycotted pariahs of Belarus and Russia, the price per tonne has soared from £240 to £631, boosted by demand from electricity power stations turning to pellets rather than oil. Apparently, there's no price cap for those of us who turned green. Ways have to be found of ending the war, when so many generous people opened their doors to Ukraine refugees. There was, invoking memories from the outbreak of previous wars, a feeling of, it'll be all over by Christmas. Hampshire hosts were told there was 6 months' limit on refugee stays. Well, Christmas will be on us in no time, and 6 months is almost up. What now? Generous feelings of hospitality are being sorely tested. This time next week, we'll know what the Prime Minister and Chancellor have up their sleeves to steer us through our economic straits. I'm sure no one is expecting the large rabbits to be pulled out of a hat. Our veterans are a shining example to us civilians of how to keep calm and carry on. I never fail to be moved by the stoicism of those I meet after Remembrance Day parades, often welling up but never losing it, as they remember comrades fallen distant years ago. Outwards we show our support. We wear our poppies with pride, sorrow and remembrance. If you want to see a really striking show of commemoration, visit the towns of Alresford, where oversized poppies adorn trees and street signs, or try Hurstbourne Tarrant, where knitted poppy themes adorn postboxes and other street furniture. Times are tough, but on Sunday we shall pause. This year I should be on duty in my own village of St Mary Bourne, where our own parade will be led by my old friend C.B., now the village's senior officer. Decades ago he commanded the Army Air Corps at Middle Wallop. If you can, try to turn out at the parade near you. It'll help take your mind off things, for a while at least.
We have Belle Garum with an alternative look at the news. Thank you, Andrew.
And our two articles today. First of all, a new leader for the fund helping local hospitals. The Hampshire Medical Fund, which is a charity that specialises in buying cutting-edge medical equipment for Hampshire hospitals, has welcomed its new chairman, Daniel Benton. The fund buys medical equipment for Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals. The equipment is bought that cannot otherwise be obtained through NHS budgets. Mr. Benton is the Senior Independent Director at NHS Digital and has helped to drive digital transformation within the NHS long-term plan, using technological innovation to improve healthcare services. Mr. Benton will take over from William Maggall, who has been leading the fund since 2014. Mr. Benton said he was delighted to be taken over from Mr. Maggall and praised his leadership. And he added, "In these exceptionally difficult times for the NHS, what we do has never been more important, and I'm honoured to be able to help." During his tenure, Mr. Maggall had overseen a total of £4 million being raised and 120 pieces of equipment being purchased for hospitals across Hampshire. The fund is honouring William's work by buying an endoscopy scope guide in his name to help with diagnosis work for Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals. And that part of the article is accompanied by photographs of the two gentlemen, Mr. Benton and Mr. William Maggall. The second, which I find slightly strange actually, is students in a new start at the old art school. Art studies have returned to Winchester City Centre after an absence of many decades. I always think of Winchester as being an art school or an art college. However, Southampton University has taken over part of the Guildhall, originally the home of Winchester School of Art from Victorian times. Post-COVID, the City Council no longer needs so much space in its main civic building. The art school moved out decades ago to relocate in the 1960s to a new campus on Park Avenue. Now, the Guildhall space is now home to Southampton University's International Home for Fashion Futures, which is part of the School of Art. And many people, including myself, have been surprised that the University of Winchester, which has expressed an interest in extending in the city centre, did not take over the space. And there's a company with a picture showing the new logo, Winchester's, whatever it's called, Winchester School of Art, University of Southampton.
Thank you. Now, this week's announcements. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 11th of November at 7:14 a.m. and begins at 4:24 p.m. Next Wednesday the 16th of November, it ends at 7:23 a.m. and begins at 4:17 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And can I remind listeners of the existence of the Winchester Colebrook Club, which is specifically for people with sight impairment. The club meets monthly on the first Monday of the month, except for May and January, and it's between 2 and 4pm in the St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester. And if you want more information on that, contact Samantha Frolick, and her telephone number is 07714-004803. That's 07714-004803. We continue with items of general news. Margaret.
Hosepipe ban finally lifted. A hosepipe ban, which has been in place for 3 months, has finally been lifted across Hampshire. People will no longer have to restrict water use outside their homes, as Southern Water lifted its hosepipe ban this week. The ban has been in place since August the 5th, when a drought was declared. It was the first of its kind in the region since 2012 and was put in place because of the low levels of the river's Test and Itchen. The measures over the past 3 months helped save around 11 million litres of water. This reduction in demand, combined with recent cooler and wetter weather, has seen river levels improve enough so that restrictions can be removed. But the region is still suffering from the effects of this year's drought, with river and reservoir levels remaining lower than expected for this time of year across the region. Southern Water's Katie Taylor said, "Thank you to everyone who has supported this hosepipe ban. Your help has allowed us to protect our environment during almost unprecedented drought conditions. While we're now in a position to lift the ban news, which I'm sure will be widely welcomed, we continue to experience the effects of drought across our region, with river and reservoir levels not back to where they really should be at this time of year. This is why we continue to encourage everyone to play their part in using water wisely through the coming months. We must do what we can to protect and preserve this precious resource."
And this article is very, very close to home. In fact, it's about where we broadcast from. And it's entitled, "Health First as Community Cafe Launches Christmas Menu." Munch will be launching its first ever Christmas menu. A healthy eating cafe and catering business has released its Christmas menu to bring festive cheer amid the cost of living crisis. Munch, at Unit 12, will be providing Christmas catering from November the 21st to December the 23rd, with its first ever festive menu. All profits from the catering and healthy eating cafe in Winnall go towards community cooking shops to help more people have access to balanced meals. The social enterprise, set up in 2020 by nutritionist Mary Needham and her husband Denzel, started events catering this year to financially support the workshops. The Christmas event and lunch menu cost £12.50 per head. Buffet options include a wrap or baguettes with festive fillings, Munch's seasonal signature salad and pigs in blankets or miso roast squash with feta parcels, as well as a dessert menu of Christmas pudding pots, triple chocolate brownie or winterberry mess. Munch coordinator Mary said, "This is not the only menu on offer, and we are very flexible with our events catering. We can offer hot food, canapés and serviced events too. All our catering is person-centred, depending on the needs of the client. We are doing a lot of Christmas cooking workshops, and we would really like to generate as many funds as possible to support these and more going into 2023. Embracing Christmas cheer is more important than ever this year, as so many people are struggling." And there's a picture of their chocolate brownies and their lovely salad.
And as Norm has just pointed out, that is very close to our hearts, and we'll be adjourning there for our mid-morning coffee break. So, anyway. This article is headed, Army Man is New Leader of the Landowners Association. Calls for the government and calls for the government and landowners or land managers to work together to support farming and the environment have been made by the new chairman of the Hampshire branch of the CLA. And I think the CLA is the County Landowners Association. Robert Sutcliffe has called on the government to help farming and the environment prosper after replacing David Pardo at a committee on Wednesday, November the 2nd, in one of the most important rural roles in the county. Following a decade serving in the army, Mr. Sutcliffe started a tree nursery in Hampshire, growing native trees and shrubs. Over 25 years, he built up expertise in forestry and environmental management and became a member of the Royal Forestry Society. In the 1990s, he gradually took over the family farming enterprise north of Winchester. And the arable crops then included oats, grown for Jordans, rye for Rye Vita, and even an attempt at growing durum wheat for pasta. The herd of beef suckler cows has been a long-term feature, and this part of the business is now being expanded. A recent successful venture has been direct sales of beef to the public. As the next generation begin to take over, the principles of regenerative agriculture are being adopted. Large areas of herbal lays and cover crops have been planted with a view to gradually increasing the permanent pasture. In parallel with the farming, there are let cottages and offices, along with other enterprises, using repurposed barns. To reduce carbon dioxide emissions and costs, a photovoltaic array was installed in 2012 and a biomass boiler and district heating system built in 2016. Mr. Sutcliffe said, "This is a time of significant change in both agriculture and estate management. My recent experience indicates that the procedures for procuring grants are far too complicated and bureaucratic. We need to develop a better system where the success of agriculture and the environment is seen as a collaboration between DEFRA and land managers." Mr. Sutcliffe also paid tribute to his predecessor. David Pardo did a superb job as chairman, maintaining a diverse range of expertise within the CLA Hampshire Branch Committee and getting the best out of all of the members. He also coped ably with the challenges of the COVID crisis, leading Zoom meetings with great skill and good humour. We look forward to his continued contributions to the committee. And as Hampshire Branch Chairman, Mr. Sutcliffe will be representing hundreds of farmers, landowners and rural businesses across the county.
Date set for big switch on. Winchester Business Improvement District bid has confirmed that the Christmas light switch on event is back. The event, sponsored by Dutton Gregory Solicitors, will see a local hero switch on the Christmas lights next Thursday, November the 17th, between 4 to 7pm on the Broadway. This live evening of entertainment attracts over 10,000 visitors and will include local choirs, acts and dancers, kick-starting the festive season in Winchester. From 12pm, the giant inflatable snow globe will be back in the square. For a small charity donation, you can enter the globe for the opportunity to take some snowy selfies. Sarah Davis, Winchester Bid Manager, said, "Winchester Bid is so delighted to organise the 2022 Christmas Lights Switch On. Turning on the Winchester Christmas lights is a tradition that we know everyone enjoys." She added, "We wanted to bring people back to Winchester to celebrate and look forward to seeing families and friends come together to witness some amazing local performers before our local hero turns on the lights at 6pm. Thank you all of those businesses who sponsor the Christmas tree. We really couldn't do it without you." The Winchester Bid Christmas Chalet opens on November the 18th until December the 22nd in collaboration with the Winchester Cathedral Christmas Market. For the latest updates, follow Festive Winch and at Winchester Bid on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Treats for NHS workers. A charity has been rewarding its NHS workers for their ongoing effort with the aim of boosting staff well-being. Hampshire Hospitals Charity has provided thousands of gifts and treats to staff at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, to show its appreciation to NHS staff in Winchester, Basingstoke, Andover and Alton Hospitals. The charity supported HHFT staff by gifting items like plants, coasters, hand creams, as well as goodies such as flapjacks and cereal bars, delivered to wards and departments by the Trust's senior team. Home workers didn't go amiss, receiving treat bags that were delivered to their doors. The celebration, known as Staff Focus Week, aimed to recognise staff for their contribution to healthcare at HHFT and enhance their overall well-being. Throughout the week, randomly selected staff at the Trust's on-site restaurants were awarded a free lunch. HHFT Chief Executive Alex Whitfield said, "Making our hospitals a great place to work is among our top priorities, and this is just one way we hope to bring smiles to the faces at a time when we're still battling with the pressures of COVID-19. HHFT Chairman Steve Erskine said, "Our staff are the biggest asset and we want to make sure that they continuously feel valued and appreciated for the amazing work that they do day in and day out. We're really lucky that so many people support our wonderful hospital charity and help us to give staff added extras like these that sometimes would just make someone's day."
Local radio cuts are causing concern. Winchester's MP has raised concerns over the BBC's plans to cut local radio services. Steve Brine highlighted the impact the cuts would have with BBC Radio Solent, which currently attracts a weekly audience of more than 256,000. The BBC plans to move £19 million into digital services. This would mean money is taken out of local radio due to the licence fee being frozen for 2 years. The proposals would see Solent's reach being limited to Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays, losing 8 hours each weekday and the entire weekend coverage. From 2 p.m, which I guess is on Friday, Solent's output would join with other local areas. Speaking in the House of Commons on November the 1st, Mr. Brian said, "BBC Radio Solent, which my constituents would listen to, at weekends we think there will be purely no local output at all, not even breakfast, except only potentially sport commentary. That is decimation. We hear about these regional investigative hubs in place of truly local radio. Will the Minister BBC, and will she give us her opinions as to whether that is what the licence fee payers actually want? Because I very much doubt that." Julia Lopez, the Minister of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, said, "The BBC is a public service broadcaster, and it's there to deal with types of journalism that is not covered adequately by the markets. So it's very important to ask some of these questions, because if it's not delivering that kind of distinct local and regional content, then we have to ask them serious questions."
Council press ahead on old depot site decision. A fresh public consultation is set to be held as civic chiefs look to press ahead with finding a long-awaited resolution to the future of the Bar End depot. The City Council is once again asking people living and working in the Highcliffe area to share their views on the potential uses of the site. The depot, which has formed part of a more extensive engagement process in recent years, is now vacant and no longer needed by the authority. covering some 2.8 acres and located between Winchester Sport and Leisure Park and Milland Road, it forms an important gateway to the city along the southeastern side. Plans to market the site were approved by Cabinet in October 2020, but the pandemic put the initiative on hold for a year. The Highcliffe community was invited to comment upon the Council's revised marketing strategy in March this year at an event held at the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. Stage one marketing was undertaken during the summer of 2022 and attracted a long list of almost 50 expressions of interest. The Council says these uses will now be assessed in terms of the economic, social and financial benefits they are likely to contribute. It is planning to share an overview of these uses at a community drop-in event on Thursday, November the 24th, in the foyer of Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. Running from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m, the event will provide an opportunity to meet key members of the Council's delivery team for the depot and to understand the potential uses which could include retail outlets, different types of homes, including retirement or senior living accommodation, light industrial uses and healthcare provision. Councillor Martin Todd, leader and cabinet member for asset management at Winchester City Council, said, "We'd had a very encouraging response from a wide range of partners outlining potential uses for the depot site. Now we want to hear from local people about the different options so that we can reflect their views in the next stage of the project. We're particularly keen to hear from people who live or work in Highcliffe, but everyone is very welcome to come along and find out more." Hobbs Rehabilitation has already expressed an interest in turning one third of the site into a neurological rehabilitation centre. Representatives attended the last consultation and spoke to residents about its potential bid. For those unable to attend the event in person, the Council has encouraged people to visit its website, which go live with the information on the same day. You can also submit a feedback form online until Thursday, December the 8th, or alternatively, send feedback via email to barend@winchester.gov.uk.
Teens hell after false claims over swan's killing. The mum of a kind-hearted teenager who was wrongfully accused of shooting two swans and several pigeons in Alresford has told of a hellish 5 months for the family. Her 17-year-old son was arrested and questioned by police on suspicion of possession of a firearm without a certificate following an incident in May. Now the youth, who can't be named for legal reasons, has been cleared of any wrongdoing, finally bringing the terrible ordeal to a close. Speaking out for the first time since, his mum said, "My eldest son is a kind-hearted boy who has always loved the countryside and its wildlife. So he was shocked as anyone by the vicious and senseless killing of the swans on the River Arle back in May. The police came to our family home because our son was the infamous 17-year-old that Hampshire police had reported they'd arrested and questioned about the attack. This all happened in front of his 9-year-old brother. One allegation was possession of a firearm without a certificate. He does not own any firearms and none were found in our home or anywhere else. The other allegation was that he killed the swans. Our son knew that he was innocent, but having never been involved with the police in his life or ever even been in trouble at school before now, he worried the whole time. We all did." She said the allegations were made by a family in Alresford who compounded the situation by making further claims online, causing rumours to spread. "The effect on my son's life during those 5 months has been terrible," she added. "It has impacted on his college exams and he's been called swan killer to his face. Even his younger brothers have had to put up with these accusations from people at school and in the street. All this time, while our son has been fretting over whether he would have to go to court and be punished for something he didn't do, I've had to keep quiet. but the police recently wrote to my son to let him know that no further action would be taken because of lack of evidence. The truth is, we don't know any evidence against him at all. The dead swans were found with multiple pellets in their heads on a footpath by the River Arle and next to the recreation ground at Albury Park on Monday, May the 2nd. The teenager's mum said the accusations weren't made until after a few days later when a cash reward was posted for information in relation to the crime, which she feels prompted someone to come forward and wrongly name her son. I am angry because I feel the reward encouraged someone to put a name forward without any evidence or thought as to what might happen as a result. Part of the reward was offered anonymously by a local man, and we accept that this was just about the swans. He wrote a lovely message to the family after hearing what had happened. The family has thanked those who have quietly supported them throughout this nightmarish period. And there is a picture of the dead swan lying by the river.
There's a poetic inspiration behind Poppy Day. The most evocative of poems, In Flanders Fields, dates back, of course, to the Great War. John McCrae, a Canadian medical officer, was inspired to write it after presiding over the funeral of a soldier in May 1915. The poem was first published in Punch magazine later that year. Many were hugely inspired into action by the poem. These included, at the time, two great women campaigners, Moina Michael and Anna Guerin. After the armistice, both started to promote the poppy as the symbol of remembrance and to raise money for the casualties of war, not just the disabled, but for widows and orphans too. In late 1921, Guerin persuaded the then-fledgling Royal British Legion to take up her idea of a poppy day. Initially, there was scepticism, but she showed samples of the silk poppies made in France and offered to provide the stock. The first British Remembrance and Poppy Day was held on the 11th of November, 1921, and it was a massive success. The Royal British Legion made £106,000, largely via poppy sales, the equivalent of £5 million today, and the poppies sold out. A key figure in scaling up the early work of the Royal British Legion was a little-known soldier, Major George Arthur Howson, M.C. He served on the Western Front with the Hampshire Regiment and went on to have an impressive war record, winning the Military Cross in July 1917 for gallantry and selfless service. After the war, Howson committed his life to providing employment for disabled veterans. He became founding chairman of the Disabled Society in 1921. The following year, the Royal British Legion realised the need to have the remembrance poppies made in England rather than France, and commissioned the Disabled Society to do this. Hence, in 1922, Howson set up the very first poppy factory on the Old Kent Road in London. Just five disabled veterans were employed initially. However, the factory extended rapidly, taking on 50 more, and producing over 1 million poppies within months. By November 1924, the poppy factory had manufactured over 27 million poppies, all funds going towards the Legion for the welfare of veterans and their families, as continues today. Although the Royal Hampshire Regiment no longer exists, having amalgamated into the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment in 1992, the story of Howson and so many others from past conflicts live on at the Royal Hampshire Regiment Museum in Winchester and in the other fine army museums nearby in Peninsula Barracks. Drop in and remember them.
Organisers reject rocket claims. Organisers of a firework display have apologised after an accident left several people with minor abrasions, but say reports on social media have blown the incident out of proportion. Weeks Social Club put on a small show for members and their family and friends in the car park of Week Community Centre on Saturday. During the event, a small box-type firework was blown over by a gust of wind, sending four shots horizontally into two safety barriers. While the fencing took most of the impact, some of the ignited sparks hit the crowd, prompting angry parents to post about the incident on social media. One woman said that the incident had left her kids terrified, and she shared a video of them screaming. However, organisers said only a handful of people were affected, with one person suffering a small burn mark on their fleece and another left with a red mark on their face. Another visitor's hair was singed, and a fourth person suffered a minor burn on their knee, which required an ice pack. Peter North, vice chairman of the Social Club, said, "We are deeply saddened and upset that an unpreventable accident occurred at the display. We immediately stopped the display and safety marshals went through and checked everyone in the crowd. It was only those four people that required our attention, and at no point were any emergency services needed or called." Mr. North said the decision was taken not to use the same box fireworks and people were consulted on whether or not they wanted to stay, adding that very few left. He rubbished claims of a second malfunction and said it wasn't possible that debris from the rockets, which they instead opted to use, could have hit cars or houses in Taplings Road. "There wasn't any of this chaos that has been reported over social media," he added. "This was just a real unfortunate event, and of course we wish we could turn the clock back." Week Social Club has been running the display without incident for around 10 years. It is not affiliated with the community centre. Meanwhile, some parents were left concerned about the incident and claimed the display was unsafe. One mum who took her kids to watch the show and wished not to be named said, "We were in the park next to the community centre. The park was full and so many people were hit." Footage from the night shared online shows people running away and screaming as rockets explode. "We just needed to get our children away from it," she added. "They were so distressed, so we didn't hang around to see what happened after. The whole thing was out of control and completely unsafe. I doubt my children and a lot of other children that were there will ever go anything to do with fireworks ever again." Another angry dad posted on Facebook, "Absolutely disgusted to hear about Week Community Centre's fireworks. My kids are traumatised. Members were charged £1 for entry by the community centre. It's not yet clear whether a refund would be offered to those in attendance."
Gardens Talk. Hampshire Gardens Trust is delighted to announce that the renowned botanist and plant hunter Tom Hart Dyke will be speaking at its annual general meeting on December the 2nd. The Trust is dedicated to protecting and conserving the county's heritage of designed landscapes. It brings together people from all backgrounds united by a passion for historic parks, gardens and designed landscapes. The event at Shawford Parish Hall is open to all and tickets cost £25. The event will include a light buffet lunch, complimentary glass of wine, and Mr. Hart Dyke will be starting his talk at 11:30 a.m. Trust Chairman Ted Wake said, "We are delighted that Tom Hart Dyke has agreed to speak at our AGM. His talk, entitled Gardener and Plant Hunter with Passion, is about how he survived captivity in Colombia and his mission to create and develop the World Garden, which has a worldwide reputation as of botanical excellence at his family home at Lullington Stone Castle. The Hampshire Gardens Trust enjoys a very close and supportive relationship with Hampshire County Council. Both the charity and the council work together to safeguard the county's areas of high landscape value. To buy a ticket, email admin@hgt.org.uk. And for more information, you can visit www. www.hgt.org.uk.
And the public can now have their old army base. The public are being asked their views on the future of the redundant Bushfield Camp army base, which is near Winchester. Developers Legal and General in Gisborne, with landowners, the Church Commissioners for England, have launched their consultation on plans for the circa 1 million square feet of regeneration. The developers are proposing a mixed-use scheme that they say has the potential to attract major brands looking for new headquarters from sectors including life science, academia, media and the health sector. The base near Badger Farm has been empty since the mid-1970s, and much of it is undeveloped chalk downland. Campaigners have been calling for much of the site to be turned into a nature reserve. Residents are invited to attend drop-in consultation events on Friday, November the 18th, from 3 till 7 p.m. at Shawford and Compton Parish Hall, and on Sunday, November the 20th, from 10 till 2 p.m. at Badger Farm Community Centre. There is also an interactive map and comment form on the project's website, which is www.bushfieldcampregeneration.co.uk, where residents can add their comments and questions. This first round of engagement events will focus on listening to the community's ideas and aspirations, with the developers having already committed to two further rounds of public consultation. There'll be another set of events in January to consult on the concept master plan, with the final set of events held in March to gather local feedback on the final master plan before a planning application is submitted early in the summer. Bushfield Camp is already allocated for development in the current Winchester City local plan. The emerging local plan also proposes to allocate the site for business and employment space, an innovative education hub, and creative industries. The overall site extends to approximately 43 hectares, within which a concept master plan will be designed on approximately half the site, leaving part of the site as publicly accessible and a biodiverse green space. Legal and General's Ben Rogers said, "We look forward to beginning our conversation with local residents on the future of the Bushfield Camp site. The project represents a huge opportunity to create a scheme which puts sustainability, inclusivity and well-being at the heart of its design. We know how important this site is to the city and the wider district, and we are committed to working with residents and stakeholders to ensure that redevelopment is something of which we can all be proud."
New Forest residents get to pig out for a little longer. Pigs will continue to roam the New Forest in search of fallen acorns until December, as pannage season is extended due to a large fall of acorns. Pannage will go beyond its usual 60-day period because there are so many acorns this year. Hundreds of pigs will now be snacking on acorns until December the 9th in the New Forest. New Forest has reminded the public to keep their distance from all the animals, not to feed them, and pass wide and slow on the roads. Pannage is the practice of releasing domestic pigs into a forest, also known as Common of Mast, and goes all the way back to the time of William the Conqueror, who founded the New Forest in 1079. The pigs are released to eat fallen acorns, beech mast, chestnuts and other nuts. Green acorns in particular are poisonous to the New Forest ponies and cattle which roam the forest for the majority of the year.
Bare Cheek as a mysterious graffiti artist strikes again. Graffiti artist Hendog has returned with a new mural which has ingeniously tucked away on a city wall. The anonymous artist has painted a teddy bear under a blanket next to a campfire, which fits neatly between missing brickwork on St. Cross Road. It is understood that the section of the wall which is opposite the bus stop outside the walls of Churnock House was built to accommodate a large stump of an old tree. The tree came down in recent years, leaving a perfect canvas for the artist's latest work. This follows a similar piece painted on the gates of the former Early and Sons coal merchants on Chesil Street, the building not in commercial use since the mid-1980s, is set to be demolished when the Chesil Theatre builds an extension next to its base in the medieval church. It features two posters with the words, "Missing, have you seen my bear, hen dog?" And there is a lovely picture of, it's quite a small space, and obviously it's black at the back, with this lovely teddy bear with his blanket and a blazing fire.
Gardens play host to an awesome light show. The Sir Harold Hillier Gardens in Romsey is introducing an immersive outdoor light art trail this festive season. The attraction starts on Thursday, November the 24th, and runs until Saturday, December 31st. The woodlands and meadows will be illuminated by a series of art installations created by some of Europe's most skilled light artists and designers using millions of LED lights. Hampshire-based designers, Light Up Trails, specialise in bringing magic in light to distinguished locations. They work with artists, technologists and producers to create unforgettable Christmas experiences. Libby Battaglia, director of Light Up Trails, said, "Sir Harold Hillier Gardens is an inspirational place, a true showcase of the natural world. So it's a real privilege to accentuate that natural beauty with light." The trail will include a series of installations throughout the 180-acre arboretum. These include Christmas Elves, an animated Christmas story created by award-winning light artist Ross Aston that will be projected onto the walls of the house, German's House. Fashion and lighting designer James Smith has created a breathtaking panoramic projection at the Himalayan Valley, telling the story of the four seasons in coloured lights. Classic winter warmer treats will be on offer at the Light Up Trails Bar, from roasted marshmallows to hearty hot chocolate and mulled wine gently infused with herbs and spices. There's sure to be something for everyone. And Light Up Trails produced Light Up Whiston Estate in December 2020, which is enjoyed by an average of 1,400 visitors each night. A year later, they created the award-winning Christmas at Cowdrey. And for more information and bookings, go to www.lightuptrails.com. And the article is accompanied by a photograph which looks really good, of a tree that has been illuminated in various colours, and then they've got the word joy, which is set up with LED lights, so it looks a really beautiful experience.
Assembly focus on climate. Communities from around Winchester came together to learn about the climate crisis and share what needs to happen to protect their future. 70 people attended the first Winchester District Climate Assembly inside the Guildhall to address the cost of living and climate emergencies. People aged from 18 to 80 who live, work or study in the Winchester District discussed what sort of future they want for the area and what must be done to turn their hopes into a reality. The meeting, organised by Winchester Together for Our Planet, prioritised people who aren't already active in local climate campaigns. All the recommendations and ideas from the Climate Assembly will go into a report and be presented to Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and local business groups. After learning about energy usage in the district, participants explored methods to create more green electricity, reduce the emission of greenhouse gases and have a healthy food that doesn't harm the planet. One point that most seem agreed on was that people want to see solar panels on all commercial buildings, industries and car parks. Residents asked the city and county council to learn from success in mainland European cities that have encouraged walking and cycling, implemented lower traffic speeds, made greener urban areas and introduced lower bus fares, as well as boosting their frequency and reliability to make buses a more realistic option. One suggestion was that incentives could be offered to shops that provide refills without packaging, sell local produce, or provide repair cafes and libraries of items where people can borrow equipment. Growing food locally was also a popular idea. Recommendations include shared insurance and more land for allotments to support community schemes. Organiser Francesca Singer Ince said it was fantastic to see so many local people come together to find innovative and practical solutions to address the impact of the cost of living and the climate crisis. It was particularly heartening to hear people who haven't been involved before sharing a sense of urgency. We can't delay action on climate crisis. Individual actions matter. At the same time, the systems in which we live need to change so we can change how we live our lives. Winchester Together for Our Planet is now focusing on making sure the voices of the Assembly are heard by urging the Council to implement changes. Francesca added, "We look forward to working alongside the City Council, businesses and residents to help everyone to tackle the energy crisis and cost of living crisis at the same time."
Thousands flocked to city fireworks. Organisers of Winchester's annual City Centre Fireworks Extravaganza has praised the public's generosity at this year's Winchester Roundtable Bonfire and Fireworks, raised £60,000 to benefit local charities. More than 16,000 people came to the city to enjoy the return of the famous torchlight procession along the High Street before the bonfire was lit, and the city enjoyed a firework display in North Wars Recreation Ground, complete with a popular street food festival on site. The display is put on by Winchester's Round Table every year as a not-for-profit event. Any money raised after covering the cost of putting on the fireworks display is given to local good causes selected by Winchester's Roundtable Community Service Team. Excuse me. Alex Reeves, Bonfire Chairman, Winchester Roundtable, said, "We are incredibly grateful for everyone who came along and enjoyed the 64th year of charity bonfire and fireworks. £60,000 of profit going back to help the community is very much needed right now. It's unique and special experience seeing thousands of people in the procession holding wax torches through the city centre, all coming together at North Wars Recreation Park for the bonfire and fireworks spectacular. I am immensely proud of everyone who made it possible. We listen and act on feedback each year to ensure the event continues to adapt and improve. The addition of the Street Food Festival this year, thanks to an I Am group, helped to give the visitors local food and drink while supporting city businesses. Some 30 volunteers all year round work tirelessly to run the event, with the kind and generous donations of local businesses. The charity bonfire and fireworks is about bringing together people from across Winchester and raising money for local people who need support over the next 12 months. I encourage any local organisation or charity to apply for our community service fund to see if we can help them." Winchester Roundtable Chairman Simon Baker said, "For us as roundtablers, this is the highlight of our year. We're a small group of men who come together to put on this event in our own time, and I'm delighted to see how positive everyone who came has responded to this year's event." And there's a picture of all the thousands of people, and there's amazing fireworks up in the sky.
The death of the city archaeologist. Eric Wadham, October 22, 1910. 27 through to September the 23rd, 2022. It was a part of Winchester's archaeology. Eric Wadham was born in Alton, where his father was head gardener at what was then the Lord Mayor Treloar Hospital. A bright boy, he won a scholarship to Eggers Grammar School, and after his father died, Treloar's provided an allowance, which enabled him to stay at school and complete his higher school certificate. A spell as a technical officer in the army, with postings to Palestine, Egypt and Kenya, followed. After leaving the army, Eric discovered that university scholarships were available for ex-servicemen, and in 1949 began a degree in physics at Exeter University. Within a few weeks, he had met Pam, and their subsequent marriage lasted 66 years, until her death 2 years ago, and they had two children, Jane and Paul. After university, Eric went to work at GEC's research laboratory in Wembley, firstly on vacuum physics, and then on early semiconductors, including thyristors and transistors, which are really the forerunner of today's silicon chips. This area of GEC's work was merged with that of Mollard, and Eric moved to Southampton in 1969. Here, he moved from the design of devices to the development of clean rooms, and which are the areas where silicon chips are manufactured. This involved travel to Holland, where Philips, which is Mollard's owner, had other manufacturing sites. His retirement in 1987 gave him more time to follow his enthusiasms of tinkering with cars, decorating, and gardening. It also opened up a new hobby, archaeology, when he and Pam joined the Winchester Archaeological Rescue Group, WARG. Now, at this time, WARG provided support to Winchester City archaeologist with work parties processing the finds from digs. He joined WARG committee in the early 1990s and in 1996 became the group's fourth chairman. The 1990s were a difficult time for WARG. Rescue archaeology, digging before a site was developed, had been a gesture from developers, but the government made it possible for local authorities to make archaeology a planning requirement, which led to the growth of commercial archaeological units. At the same time, the City Council gave its archaeological team significantly more support, although only a few years later to cut back on activities. This removed much of its traditional role from WARG and created a heavy load for its chairman. On a happier note, Eric cut the cake at WARG's 25th anniversary party in 1997. In 2005, he stepped down and was made an honorary life member. He and Pam continued to support WARG events until Pam's health worsened and Eric devoted himself to her care. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Eric Wadham, 1927 to 2022.
Winchester Cycle Route makes top 20 on Instagram. A comparison company has named a Winchester cycling route as one of the most photographic spots in Europe. Compare the Market has compiled a list of the top 20 most Instagram cycling routes across Europe. While the Wild Atlantic Way in Ireland took was crowned the winner, King Alfred's Way was a strong competitor as number 17. The 350-kilometre circular off-road adventure route connects historic sites dating back 10,000 years. The trail starts at King Alfred's statue in Winchester, where the Anglo-Saxon ruler is buried. Cycle Winchester Secretary Rob Jordan said, "We are fortunate to have not one but two picturesque cycleways starting in Winchester, King Alfred's Way and the South Downs Way. These bring valuable tourism revenue into the city, which emphasises the value of implementing good quality cycle infrastructure in Winchester. While these routes are mainly off-road, the visitors coming here to enjoy them will make use of our city streets, so we look forward to improved on-road facilities as well. Cycle Winchester is a community action group which promotes cycling as an inexpensive and eco-friendly method of transport. The list was determined by results from sites Much Better Adventures, Komoot, Rough Guides and Cycling UK. Based on the list of 63 cycling routes, the comparison company then analysed the relevant hashtags across social media for each route and picked the top 20 based on the highest number of hashtags.
Helping Hand. Newbury Building Society, who have a branch on Winchester High Street, have announced a cost of living support project. This will offer donations to organisations supporting people with the cost of living in and around their branch towns. With many worrying about the impact of rising prices, the Building Society want to identify organisations helping people in five areas: debt, energy costs, transport costs, food costs and mental health. Three charities around Winchester area have received donations. Winchester Youth Counselling, who provide free counselling and therapies to young people aged 11 to 25, the Wickham Pantry and the Citizens Advice Bureau, Winchester District. The Wickham Pantry is a discounted food shop that provides essential groceries for people struggling to make ends meet. Kate English, Wickham Community Centre Manager, said, "A huge thanks to Newbury Building Society. Its donation will make a real difference to our pantry members. The cost of living crisis has been a major issue for people we support. This will help us to continue to ensure that the full force of the cost of living is eased a little for our members."
And the Sir Optimist Club is celebrating 60 years. A Winchester club that aims to improve the lives of others celebrated its diamond anniversary. The Sir Optimist International Club of Winchester marked its 60th anniversary with a host of events. Among the visitors at Abbey House was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Derek Green. Formed in 1962, the Winchester branch convenes twice a month at the Holiday Inn Winchester. It is part of a global movement dedicated to supporting women and girls. Winchester Club Secretary Julie Blackwell said, "We were delighted the Mayor was able to host and join us over the weekend celebrations. It is an endorsement of our activities in the local area and recognition of the club's support to local charities." The club had support from members in clubs in the region, and with other friends and guests, we were able to raise a substantial amount from our quiz to go to the SIGBI Diamond Education Grant. As well as a reception at Abbey House, members enjoyed a dinner at the Mercure Wessex Hotel and a tour of Women in Winchester before a big ticket fundraiser at Littleton Memorial Hall, and is accompanied by three of the members of the Sir Optimist Club with the Mayor under a nice banner which says 60th Anniversary.
Members fume as swimming gala sparks parking chaos. A swimming gala has caused parking chaos at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. Members were left fuming after being ticketed for leaving their cars parked on curbs and verges, despite everyone, active staff, giving them the green light to do so. The Leisure Centre car park had been crammed over the weekend while the facility hosted a two-day gala event. A message on Everyone Active's website warned of pool closures, but frustrated gym users say no contingency plan was put in place to allow for the added influx of visitors. They have bemoaned communication between Everyone Active and City Council traffic wardens after many received costly mixed messages. One member, who wished not to be named, attended the Leisure Centre on Saturday morning in hope of a relaxing weekend gym session. After circling the car park to no avail, she asked staff whether it would be possible to park up on the curb instead. "They told me it wouldn't be a problem, as long as there was enough room from an ambulance or fire engine, which there was," she said. However, after returning to her vehicle, she found a £50 fine stuck to her windscreen. "It was absolutely heaving," she added. "There were cars parked everywhere. I think it's a really poor show that people are told one thing by everyone active, and then the city council swoops in and tickets everyone. I've not had a ticket in 10 years of living in Winchester, and normally I'm very mindful. It feels like a slap in the face. Lots of members are disgruntled. They're shutting the pool whenever they want, making loads of money without any regard for how many people arrive in the car park, and those who are paying their membership every month don't get a refund. They get parking tickets instead. I really think on principle I shouldn't have to go and park in another car park when I use the gym. She has already protested the contested the parking ticket and is hopeful to get revoked by civic chiefs. I just don't think the City Council and Leisure Centre worked very well together on this, she added. If there is a special event going on and parking is going to be a problem, then tell people and we can all work together. Winchester City Council and everyone active has been contacted for comment.
The extracts for this week, so thank you to all our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.